It is Monday, October 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump's former campaign chairman is indicted. The transfer of power from Catalonia to the central Spanish government begins as preparations are underway for a snap election in December.
I don't see that an election in 2 months' time will change anything substantially.
And some people say ghostly things are occurring in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was charged Monday with conspiring against the U.S., money laundering, and lying to the government. The charges stem from a lobbying effort for former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych. Manafort and a former business associate, Rick Gates, were indicted by a federal grand jury in Washington as part of special counsel Robert Mueller's criminal investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. Mueller also disclosed that former Trump foreign affairs advisor George Papadopoulos pleaded guilty October 5th to lying to federal agents in January about his contacts with people he understood to have close connections to senior Russian government officials. Well, VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren joins me in the studio. Greta, Manafort's not a White House staff member, but he was still President Trump's former campaign chairman. The importance of this indictment.
Well, it's never good to be indicted. I can tell you that. I was a criminal defense attorney for years, and it's terrible that he got indicted. But in reading the indictment, I think that the president can take some comfort, and this is just the beginning, but some comfort in the allegations in the indictment. The counts in the indictment do not include any collusion between the Trump campaign, President Trump, and the Russian government. What it does indict him for, and indict Manafort, he's the former campaign manager, and Gates, his assistant, or someone who worked with him, is financial crimes. They were getting money from the Ukraine government, and they were trying to hide it from the U.S., hide it so they don't have to pay taxes from it, and they did something we call money laundering. Now, what it also accuses Manafort and Gates of is that they did not register as federal agents when they were lobbying for the Ukraine government that was very favorable, of course, to the Russians. So that's a big problem for Mr. Manafort and Mr. Gates. But it doesn't say in the indictment that there's any sort of suggestion that the Trump campaign was involved in that. The more troubling issue, which I'm sure you're going to ask me about, is the other man.
Right.
That's George Papadopoulos. Yeah. Now, that's a problem for the Trump campaign because he has been He pleaded guilty on October 5th to providing false statements to the FBI going back to January 27th of this year, 7 days after the President Trump was inaugurated. And he was being questioned by the FBI about potential or possible Russian interference with our election. And he apparently lied about it. I don't say apparently lied about it. He did lie about it because he has pleaded guilty to that. He pleaded guilty on October 5th. What has got all the sort of the tongues wagging D.C. among the criminal defense bar today, though, is he pleaded guilty on October 5th. It was sealed until today. We didn't know about it. Usually this
yes,
stuff
why?
Is open.
Yeah.
Well, that I don't know about, but you'll notice he has not been sentenced. He pled guilty, but he has not been sentenced. Now, that's the red flag. That means that he is not only is he cooperating with the prosecutor on potential other people who might be involved in some criminal activities, but they're holding the sentencing over his head so that they continue to make sure that he continues to cooperate. So that's the far bigger problem because he says in his statement in connection with the plea is that he was having conversations with people who were part of the Russian investigation, and that's of course what he lied about. And the conversations were about whether or not that the Russians had some dirt on former candidate for president, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. This is just beginning.
Right.
We don't know where this is going to lead, but that's the one that's the problem for the that's a greater problem, at least as far as we can figure out today, for President Trump and the White House. They may have no problems with it, but that's the potential problem.
Mm. And then also, President Trump tweeted, talking about Manafort, that there is no collusion and spoke about that. And I believe President Trump in the past has also spoken about potential involvement that former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton had as well possibly with the Russians, or, you know, a deal she did with Ukraine.
Well, 2017, the new way the president communicates with people is through Twitter, that we've all learned that well. And yes, he did tweet that about Manafort, because that's sort of consistent with the indictment. There's no suggestion that there is collusion between Manafort and the Russians about the Clinton campaign or the Clinton campaign. What the president does not tweet about, though, is George Papadopoulos. That's the one I want to know what he says about that one. That's the big mystery here, and that criminal complaint, or that what he pleaded guilty to, was he wasn't indicted. He did it by what's called a criminal complaint. That does talk about conversations, trying to set up communications with the Russians about Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. But I do want to underline is that we still don't know if there's a crime. But there is at least a link of information from the document to the Russians. That doesn't necessarily mean a crime happened, but you know, there's certainly a lot more explained to be done. This certainly does heighten, you know, the concern and put a bigger spotlight on it.
All right. Thanks very much. That's VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren. Well, also joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, with hashtags like Manafort Monday and hashtag Indictment Day, this is certainly a big topic of conversation on social media. Lots of people talking about this, as you mentioned, including President Trump. In addition to tweeting that there was no collusion, he tweeted that this was years ago, before Paul Manafort was even part of the Trump campaign, and again, wondering why Hillary Clinton isn't being targeted. And this is the line of reasoning that Trump supporters are using on social media, that this was separate from the Trump campaign, happened years before Manafort's affiliation with the president, and that Clinton should be investigated. They're also alleging that Manafort is being targeted because of his links to Trump. And that's actually why the Trump opponents are hoping for on social media, what they're looking to see. They're hoping Manafort gives the government information that might lead to more indictments, higher level indictments. So that's the conversation that's swirling right now on social media amid all of this new information. As you have that going on, you have internet sleuths who, I'm always impressed by the internet sleuths, the things they can find, including a tweet from television host Sean Hannity quoting the former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, who was, of course, a big Trump supporter, who said back in August, nobody should underestimate how much Paul Manafort did to really help get this Trump campaign to where it is right now. So Trump opponents using that as well. And then George Papadopoulos talking about how he was involved with the Trump campaign. A photo circulating that was discovered way back in March 2016 shows Papadopoulos sitting with then-candidate Trump at a table during a foreign affairs security meeting while he was candidate for president. So people saying that there is some link there, not clear what that link is yet, but they continue to pore over that information. And there's always a kernel of something fun in these as newsy topics. And the 1980s sitcom Webster is trending because the lead one of the lead characters in that sitcom was named George Papadopoulos. So
really?
a lot of jokes about what did the father from Webster do to get indicted? But again, leave it to the internet to find these angles always and try to push them out across the digital sphere.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta has won Kenya's presidential election. The United States pledges $60 million for Sahel counter-terror force. The United States is commending Masoud Barzani's decision to step down from his position as president of Iraqi Kurdistan. And the Pakistan and the U.S. remain divided on how to initiate Afghan peace talks. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A small object thought to be an asteroid or maybe a comet was discovered recently by an astronomer at the University of Hawaii's Pan-STARRS 1 telescope. While discovery of such an object might be considered somewhat ordinary, where it is thought to have originated makes it remarkable. Scientists studying the object's speed and trajectory says it appears to have come from somewhere in the galaxy but outside of our solar system. If true, they say this would be the first interstellar object to be observed in the solar system and confirmed by astronomers. The object was discovered on October 19th after passing close to the Sun on September 9th. It's thought to be less than 400 meters in diameter and is currently traveling at a speed of 44 kilometers per second. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the United Nations says greenhouse gas emissions are the highest in 800,000 years. We'll have a report. Spain's state prosecutor says he will seek charges of sedition and rebellion against ousted Catalan cabinet officials. Attorney General José Manuel Maza also called for charges of embezzlement against Catalonia's leaders over their push to separate from Spain. But Catalonia's separatist party announced it would run in an upcoming snap election in December, set up by the Spanish government after it dissolved the regional parliament. Both announcements came as Catalonia entered its first week after the Spanish central government's assertion of control over the would-be breakaway region. Foreign Minister Alfonso Dastis was asked by the Associated Press about security and the threat of violence.
Look, we are really and sincerely hopeful that nothing, situations where there is going to be the need to use of force will happen in the run-up between now and the elections or even afterwards. But in any case, the security, the law and order, will have to be upheld by the Mossos de Esquadra, which has been the intention of the government throughout.
Catalonia's former deputy leader denounced Madrid's takeover as a coup d'etat and anti-democratic. The independence drive followed a disputed referendum October 1st that the region's former leaders took as a mandate, but Madrid called illegal and refused to recognize. Hundreds of thousands marched in the regional capital, Barcelona, Sunday against independence and for Spanish unity. Monash University senior lecturer Stuart King tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, while impressive, this was not a big showing by Spanish standards.
The local police force, not the Catalan police force, but the local Barcelona police force, estimate there was about 300,000 people in the demonstration. And to put it in context, at the beginning of the Second Gulf War, for example, there were over 1 million people protesting in the streets of Barcelona. So in terms of Spain, it is a substantial number of people, but it's not a very large number of people.
Does it suggest that the region is divided with regard to independence?
It is. The region has been divided. In some ways, this is the problem that not recognizing the referendum has caused, because now we see those people who did not vote in the referendum take to the streets in support of being within Spain. And I think a referendum would have allowed the Catalans to make a clear decision about the future of Catalonia in relation to Spain.
Well, won't the election December 21st do that?
No, I don't think so. People voted elections for lots of different issues, and I think I was surprised that the election was coming so soon afterwards. I can understand why the central government would do so, because they don't want to have an extended rule in Catalonia because it will seem like they are taking over. But I don't see that an election in 2 months' time will change anything substantially. We will still get substantial numbers of people voting in favour of pro-independence parties, and we will get substantial numbers of people voting in favour of pro-union parties. But people vote, you know, traditionally for parties for lots of different reasons, not just for the question of independence.
But conceivably, we could be back where we started with a pro-independence regional government.
That is exactly the point. That's why I'm quite surprised by the elections, with calling the elections within such a short time frame.
Did Madrid make a tactical error there?
They are very careful that they don't want to be seen to take over Catalan institutions. There's a long history of this going back to 1714, initially when Catalan political and legal institutions were taken over by Madrid. Again, this happened in 1939, at the end of the Spanish Civil War, when the Franco regime came to power. So they don't want to be seen to be repeating what in Catalonia is seen as an invasion or a coup d'etat.
Stuart King said while he doesn't anticipate violence, he said the Spanish government must rule carefully over the next 2 months and avoid provocative acts. He said some members of the ruling coalition want to end the teaching of the Catalan language in schools. Such an act would, he said, likely result in massive protests. The World Meteorological Organization reports greenhouse gas emissions in Earth's atmosphere have reached the highest level ever in 800,000 years. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch in Geneva of the WMO's annual Greenhouse Gas Bulletin.
The report is being released in advance of next week's UN climate change negotiations in Bonn, Germany. It is meant as a wake-up call to nations that time is running out to take the necessary actions to prevent global warming. The World Meteorological Organization reports CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere surged at record-breaking speed last year to historic highs. The WMO says CO2 levels are now 145% higher than pre-industrial levels. It warns this has the potential to change the climate systems in unprecedented and disastrous ways. WMO Secretary General Petteri Talas says this is already occurring. He tells VOA scientists have been able to track the variability of carbon dioxide concentrations for the past 800,000 years.
We have far exceeded this natural variability that took place in the past, and we are giving extra energy for our planet. And we have already started seeing growing amount of natural disasters related to weather. And for example, the economic losses related to these disasters, they have tripled since the 80s. So that's a consequence of climate change.
The report finds CO2 contributes more than 60% to the heating of the planet, and that human activity and natural climate variability are behind the substantial increase in greenhouse gas concentrations. Talas warns temperature increases will reach dangerous levels by the end of the century without rapid cuts in CO2 and other greenhouse gas emissions. He says measures to mitigate climate change must be urgently taken. Talas says work on developing renewable energy systems and transportation systems, including electric and hybrid cars, must be accelerated. He adds these low-carbon technologies can play an important role in reducing greenhouse gas emissions and lowering Earth's heat for future generations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world, and you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Tuesday is Halloween, the spookiest day of the year. Some people like to use the holiday to visit scary attractions like haunted houses. In historic Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, a ghost tour takes visitors to places that are said to be haunted. But that's no surprise to locals, who say they often see and hear paranormal activity. VOA's Deborah Block has the spine-chilling story.
The tiny, serene town of Harpers Ferry is full of 19th century buildings where tourists come to see the sights and enjoy the shops, restaurants, and inns. But behind the serenity, there are restless spirits from the paranormal world.
The whole town is haunted. I mean, people have seen things. I mean, you could probably ask anybody in town that's been here or born and raised here or works in here, they've seen something.
Alyssa Levasseur works at the John Brown Wax Museum, where displays illustrate the life of the abolitionist who believed slavery could end only through armed insurrection. The museum is in what used to be a family home.
I've heard kids, I've heard footsteps, and I know that they're here.
At the True Treats Historic Candy Store, manager Tara Dockman is known as the Ghost Lady for her paranormal abilities. She says two ghosts frequent the store, a woman and a man named Colby.
The female has a white flowy gown, and she goes from the top of the stairs on up to the top of the store. And the Colby likes to show himself. He usually has a shoulder or his pants leg, you'll see. They also like to throw candy around. They also have shown themselves in shadows and slamming doors on customers.
It's dusk outside St. Peter's Church, where historian Rick Garland begins his weekend ghost tours.
Who believes in ghosts?
He stops at a building where a woman named Shirley experienced a terrifying paranormal incident in the 1960s.
And the whole door violently shakes for a few moments. And then Shirley hears what sounds like something or maybe someone falling down the stairs. She's right at the bottom of the stairs. All she has to do is turn and look. What does she see? Nothing.
Garland encourages people to take photos and post them on his Facebook page. Ghostly figures have shown up in the pictures, as well as other images attributed to ghosts, like a ball of light called an orb and a light stream known as a vortex.
I tell people when you go out to take pictures, it does seem to hurt and might help if you dress a little bit like they dressed.
After taking the tour, William McGinty said he's not convinced ghosts are real.
Your mind can play funny tricks on you. I hear noises in my house sometimes.
But for the ghost lady of Harper's Ferry, the spirits are everywhere.
You really do have to debunk the creaking and stuff like that. But once you get past that and the stuff starts touching you and throwing stuff at you, don't tell me that it's not for real.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Harper's Ferry, West Virginia.
Sounds spooky. Well, that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. and its international allies and partners are taking new steps to ensure that President Donald Trump's vision for a world that is secure against terrorist threats is realized, said U.S. Coordinator for Counterterrorism Nathan Sales in a recent interview. One of those steps is the recent endorsement with partners of the Global Counterterrorism Forum of the Anatolia Memorandum on the Protection of Soft Targets.
The Anatolia Memo contains a number of practices for governments and private sector entities to use together in cooperation to protect places to which the public is invited. Stadiums, restaurants, parks, sidewalks, against terrorist threats. This is an increasing trend that we're seeing overseas. We're seeing it here at home, and so it's important for us all to work together to secure our public spaces against terrorist attacks.
The United States, in partnership with Morocco, also recently announced the launch of a new initiative to address the growing threat posed by homegrown terrorists. We've seen in the past 3 years a number of foreign terrorist fighters who've traveled to Iraq and Syria to fight with ISIS, some of whom have come home and perpetrated deadly terrorist attacks, said Ambassador Sales. But that's not the only threat we face.
We also have to be mindful of people who are inspired by ISIS or inspired by Al-Qaeda. They may not have a membership card, they may not have any battlefield experience, but it doesn't take much more than simply renting a truck and driving it into a crowd. So the threat of homegrown terrorism, people without any operational ties, is a very serious problem. It's a threat that's on the rise, and it's one that we're going to be focusing on.
The United States and Global Counterterrorism Forum partners are also focusing on strengthening criminal justice and other rule of law institutions that confront terrorism.
Counterterrorism is not just for soldiers. It's not just for spies. It's also for cops. And so part of what we've done here in the United States is create capabilities for state law enforcement officers and federal law enforcement officers alike to partner together to bring cases, to bring criminal charges in cases where that's warranted.
We're doing the same sort of thing, said Ambassador Sales, standing up these capabilities with partners around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.